Juan says, Andrew, with the separatist movements going on around the world, Catalonia, Scotland, do you think states in the U.S. will also want to secede from the Union someday? I'm thinking about California and Texas primarily. Or what about states themselves breaking apart, like Northern California, Southern Oregon, becoming the new state of Jefferson and all that that they're talking about? That's a great question. Do you think the gov, the one we love, would ever allow that kind of stuff to go on?
No, history proves that they won't.
They won't. You know, they just
Lincoln
won't.
Called it preserving the Union, yeah. John C. Calhoun and the nullification crisis, that whole Civil War thing would have come to a head during the age of Andrew Jackson. Because the Federal Congress approved a tariff on imported manufactured goods that the South objected to because their primary trading partners were England. And so in an attempt to force them to do business with manufacturers in the North, they put a very strong protective tariff on imported foreign goods. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina, through John C. Calhoun, said, no, we nullify that. That's the null and void. Doesn't apply in South Carolina. And then the nullification crisis broke out between South Carolina and the federal government. And Andrew Jackson backed down from his federal stance. You know, okay, we're going to back down, but don't try this again. And so the idea that states' rights and states could nullify federal law, well, that argument is being drawn out today, isn't it?
All the time.
I'm happy to hear.
With marijuana,
that the liberal
all kinds
left,
of things. Yeah, okay.
Well,
yeah.
Marijuana and illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So our new governor, for example, has pledged to ignore federal immigration laws in New Jersey. He's going to make the whole state a sanctuary state.
Oh, good.
Well, I mean, hey, maybe that's the beginning of a nullification crisis where mm-hmm. states can suddenly assert their federal rights. And now the federal government's choice and what they've done for the last 100 years in an attempt to shake this feeling out of these states is with the carrot and the string. Well, if you do what we want you to do, we'll give you these highway funds, we'll give you these education funds, we'll give you these block grants and so forth.
Sure.
And then, so if you don't do what we say, by contrast, we're going to take them from you. And now a federal judge has said, no, you can't. Just because the kid is not following your instructions doesn't mean you can take his cell phone. He's entitled to that cell phone. And so that's what the states are now being emboldened by. Will that grow into something major and drastic? That remains to be seen. But I do know that there are good arguments on both sides. And the federal government has overstepped its authority in so many areas that any one could trigger this sort of a constitutional crisis.
Mm-hmm. As much as some people would think if California would go, good riddance, it's so wacko. But yeah, it's hard to imagine that the president, any president, would sit by and just let that happen without, doing what you're saying. You know?
Well, I don't feel that way about California. You know, for me, if California wants to do what California does and they leave it in California, that's fine for me. I just won't go there.
Sure.
You know, the
sure.
same with
they want
Norway
to vaccinate your kids,
Sweden.
Mandatory or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. You know, whatever. You could do whatever you want there. Just don't try to bring it here. That's the only caveat I have. So I'm all good with whatever they want to do. Just leave it there. And that's what I think our Constitution contemplated when they, with the 9th and 10th Amendments, not any rights not specifically granted to the federal government in this document are reserved to the people and to the states respectively. So we could do what we want in our state. You should be able to do what you want in your state. And California, God love you, you could do exactly what you want in your state.
So that's the whole 10th Amendment that you just stated, the 10th
that
Amendment
is.
Very clear.
And Frederick Douglass, a little bit, which is, the limits of tyrants are prescribed by those whom they oppress. So when the people of California get tired of it, then they'll do something about it. Until then, it's not my position as a citizen of another state to do something about it.
When they get tired of it now, they just move to Texas.
Yeah, and try to make Texas into California.
That's what they do.
You guys better stop them. That's for sure. They're infiltrating, no doubt about it.
That's what they do. Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone. It is November 22nd, 2017. So let's talk a little bit about your coin, gold and silver numismatic biz in Hilton Head in New Jersey, and what you guys are going to do in the holidays and what kind of inventory you have. Talk a little bit about what you got to sell. Anything fun?
Okay, so my general feeling is we're running out of time. We're running out of time. And so we're working over the holidays. I mean, I'll take a moment to spend with the family, et cetera, but for the most part, it's full steam ahead between now and the end of the year. Gold prices themselves are creeping up, which means the raw material costs for some of our more common items is creeping up. Yeah, that's always, I suppose, good and bad. You know, we need higher prices, obviously, in order to shake out material. But boy, every time we go to the marketplace to buy something, we're just paying more and more and more, and then a couple of these shocks come to the system. So a very famous numismatist, Eric P. Newman, recently passed away. And he had been amassing coins for 70 years.
Whoa.
And his collection has hit the marketplace in five parts at auction. And so we all scramble, all of us coin dealers, scramble to snap up whatever choice material we can buy, right, and competing with each other. And we set new price levels. Coins that haven't seen the light of day for 50 or 70 years suddenly appear and bring record prices and causes folks to look at their holdings and say, wait a minute, if that one is worth that, then this one must surely be worth close to that.
Oh, so you have these different coin dealers bidding up these because you guys all want them.
That's right.
Wow.
Public auction.
Wow.
So, and, there are 10,000 high-end coin dealers in the country, at least. And so there are a lot of people. I'm a life member of the ANA, American Numismatic Association, and I'm life member 4,121, and I think there have been 3,000 more after me. So it's a big business, and a lot of folks rely upon numismatic coins as an intergenerational wealth transfer tool. You know, you put something aside for the grandkids, well, there's no better thing to put aside than real American money. So was that my commercial?
Here, I think so. That was a good one, man. I like
it. At 800-468-2646. If that's your field of interest, my commercial endeavor is usgoldcoins.com, a team of
numismatists.
As opposed to a team of coin salesmen. So these folks understand coins. They'll guide you through the process. They'll teach you whatever you're willing to learn and supply you with text. That are well written and well researched. That information is all available to you. Just call 800-468-2646. Tell them you heard it on One Radio Network and start the process because, like everything else, there is a bit of a learning curve and you want to get that out of the way while sanity still prevails.
I've often wondered if you have a particular, like a St. Gaudens, and say the price is $1,500, whatever, and then say gold over a 2-month period goes up to $200, or does the coin go up that same amount?
Well, what happens is dominoes force it up. So the $20 St. Gaudens exists in all grades from 1 to 70. 1 is a coin that's worn out so that you can barely see the design.
Just
anymore.
A big hunk of gold.
It's been used so much, just a big hunk of gold.
Yeah.
And it sells for about that, about a big hunk of gold.
Whatever the gold
price. And then, the 2-grade coin has a few more details, and the 5-grade coin has a few more, and the 15-grade coin has more details still. And you keep working your way up till you get to the coin that is just like the day it left the mint. It's in mint state. And perhaps it's certified. So if you go all the way to the bottom of the scale and you work your way up, you'll find that bottom of the scale coin at 1500, the next one at 1510, and the next one at 1525, and so on, all the way up the line. Now, if all of a sudden the bullion price or the basal value, the weight of that first coin goes up by $200, like dominoes, it pushes up all the coins ahead of it. And like that ripple in a pond, by the time it reaches the MS-65 coin, mid-state 65 on a scale of 1 to 70, it might push that one up $400. So these price moves work their way up the ladder and affect the price of everything else. When it starts at the bottom, with the bullion value of coins being the beginner. So if you take a coin like, a $3 gold piece, where the price of gold is almost the last thing that comes into the determination of value, even in the lowest possible grade, it's still worth a couple of $100, or about 40 or 50% more than its gold content. So that coin is going to be less affected by a $10 rise in the price of gold than, say, a $20 gold piece, which the bulk of its value is in the gold. So those are the semi-numismatic coins. Bulk of the value is in the metal that the coin is made up of, very sensitive to increases in the price of gold. And then you have the numismatic coins, which, their bulk of their value is in the fact that they're so rare, sometimes has very little to do with the gold or silver or copper content.
What if the gold price would go down 200 or 300? The same principle.
Same is true, except that the supply and demand equation take hold in this market more than the bullion market. In the bullion market, they need more gold, they can dig it out of the ground. But in the $20 gold piece market, they only made what they made, and that's that. The only way you're going to shake coins loose is to offer a premium. And so a fall in the price of gold doesn't mean that every single investor in $20 gold piece is going to sell their coins. There may not be any supply available at the lower price. So it is unfortunate and fortunate at the same time. It does tend to make numismatic coins and even semi-numismatic coins more resilient. You have to have a period of extended gold lower before that starts to reflect in the semi-numismatic coin. This is one of the reasons why I like them more than bullion.
Right.
And the other thing, of course, being that they're classic American rarities that, really are a fixed supply, limited supply.
Okay. On the phone, can you hold on 1 second? We'll get you after the commercial.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got somebody going to... Let's do this, and then we'll be back with this phone call. Previously with chemist, biologist, and nutritionist George Altgeld, we asked him this. And so what do you think about Dr. Seneff's contention that as these glyphosates are in the soil, they bust the sulfur cycle, and that's really detrimental to the body?
It's extremely detrimental. Sulfur is such an important detoxifying agent for the entire body, and especially for the liver. You've got to have trace minerals so that the liver can build these compounds that are essential for getting itself cleaned. And that lady who was talking about sulfur,
mm-hmm.
Man, play that ad every chance you get, because our foods are so deficient in sulfur, and it is a big deal for the liver to have enough sulfur to make all those compounds that it uses to detoxify itself. Not just sulfur, they're all important, but sulfur is the one that we're so deficient in, and we need sulfur.
Thanks, George. I had some this morning. You might want to give it a try. You can click an order right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. 3 locations, 3 prices delivered. And if you like more than £4 for a discount, email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously, with a longtime friend, Phil Wilson, the exclusive distributor of the Relax Far Infrared Sauna.
I've been sweating and promoting the benefits of saunas and sweating for 16 years now. Can you believe it?
Wow, 16 years. Regularly that long?
20 minutes a day for about 15 years now.
6 months ago, man, I started doing it every day, and I don't think I've missed a day. How this has improved my life, I mean, I can't tell you. It's pretty amazing. I tell you what, I feel better and better. What's going on?
Well, the proof is definitely in the pudding. And if a person would go to YouTube and search for Relax Sauna testimonials, they'll get 650 testimonies on what the Relax Sauna has done for different individuals, from feeling better to getting rid of extreme pain to getting rid of neuropathy to just helping a person feel more calm, alert, relaxed, tuned in, and everything else.
and everything else. These are really lovely units, extremely low EMFs. Email me, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com, and I'll give you a deal on this sauna. We also have an option to get a relaxed heat lamp, but we'll work it out together. Email me, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com. If you're a regular, you probably are familiar with Living Libations up in Canada. We've had Nadine on the show many times, and just probably one of the most precious little websites, and they have lots of stuff, essential oils and face creams and hair stuff and tooth things and perfumes, and I mean, just really nice. And boy, you talk about some unique gift ideas for a male and female species. Pretty cool. And so there's a sale going on right now. It's just begun, 15% store-wide sale plus free shipping. Regular shipping by small package. And so they're going to be able to get these things to you. Yeah, you want to get ordered now, so you make sure you get everything for Christmas and holidays. 15% store-wide sale for online customers only. Just all kinds of really beautiful items for health and beauty from Living Libations. Everything from chocolate to different really nice fragrances to hair, as I said, and face. So really beautiful. So if you click on the front page of One Radio Network and go to Living Libations, scroll down. It's pretty far down now. Scroll down, and they're 15% off. Not sure when it's going to end. I'm trying to find it here. Well, just do it now. I'm not sure. They don't even have an end date here, but I'm sure there's sending. Oh, offer expires. Oh, at the end of this weekend. So this is a weekend deal. Okay, so do it this weekend. Do it over Thanksgiving. Do it over Thanksgiving. Get some shopping done, okay?
Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay, we had a little cattywampus with our regular studio quality connection from Hilton Head. We'll get it figured out by next week, and Andrew's on the phone, but we can hear him loud and clear. Let's go to the telephone, and hi, who's this, please, on the phone?
Yes, this is Mary calling, and how are you?
We're fine. Mary, where do you live?
I'm in West Virginia.
In West Virginia. Okay, you're on the air with Andrew. Go ahead.
Since it's the holidays coming up, and I was thinking about Christmas presents, I would like to have your opinion about gold commemorative coins, and if they're worth buying as an investment for young kids.
Yeah, I love them. You can get the quarter-ounce $5 gold pieces. Now, I want to be clear. These are coins struck by the U.S. Mint for specific holidays or events, and they are the full content of a $5 gold piece. So they're just like a 1928 $5 Indian, for example, in terms of their weight and content. So they made them in 1986 for the Statue of Liberty. They made them in 87 for the Constitution, and then they made them for the Olympics and things like Mount Rushmore. So they're great. They're not expensive relative to their gold content, so I want to caution you there. Don't spend too much for one, because they are relatively modern. But to me, there's nothing better to start a kid than the $5 commemorative gold pieces struck by the U.S. Mint.
Oh, okay, good, because that was going to lead into my second question. Is that, because I always hear everybody talking about buying the one-ounce coins, but is buying like the dollar coins and the $2.50 coins and the $5 coins worth buying as well? Instead of just focusing on the $20 one-ounce gold coin.
It's the most popular.
Are they worth it?
Because you get...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you get the... No, that's all right, my fault. You get the most gold for the money in many instances with the old $20 gold piece. But those, the ones you mentioned, the dollar, the two and a half, the five, the 10, and even the $3 and $4 gold pieces, they just represent great numismatic value. If you're not so hung up on the metal content of the coin, they offer some fantastic investment values.
No, okay, great. And then my last question would be, is that if they start buying or trading the barrel of oil in yuan, which I heard they're already doing, how is that going to affect us here in the U.S.? I mean, are prices going to go up for just about everything?
Yes, that's exactly what will happen. So we talked about that briefly in the last segment, that we export a lot of our inflation in other countries. So we send a dollar to China, and they just hold it there. They don't spend it. It doesn't compete for goods and services here at home. Then we've parked that inflation, if you will, in China. But boy, if the rest of the world starts using Chinese money, and so they start trading their American money for Chinese money to buy oil, then the only place that the dollars can come is back here to the United States. Nobody will want to store them anymore. And if you have a bunch more dollars chasing the same amount of gold coins, well, the price is going to rise. That's just what happens.
Well, if it says that you can, their yuan is backed by gold, and if you, I guess, are trading in their currency, does that mean that if you wanted to, you can, like, whatever their note is, you can trade it in at whatever their local bank is or whoever represents them, and you can get like a gold coin in their panda version or something like this?
No, but their coin is not backed. No.
It might go to that one day, but and if it does, boy, that'll be the death of the dollar, no doubt about it. But for right now, they have a lot of gold. That's about it. Whether or not they choose to ever honor their commitments with gold remains to be seen. But in terms of security and safety, there is no difference between the yuan and the dollar. Many would argue, in fact, that the dollar is even safer than the yuan because their economy is in much worse shape than ours is. I wouldn't be comfortable with either one myself. Both are notes. Both have counterparty risk. For me, the only thing that I'm secure with is lawful money struck by the U.S. Treasury.
Caller, what I think you may be confused about is that the Chinese and yuan began to do a gold-backed oil contract if people bought it in yuan and they didn't deliver on the deal, they would be able to convert it to gold. But not the yuan itself is not backed by gold.
That's correct.
Yes, that's what it was. I apologize. Yes.
That's right.
That was it. Otherwise, then, gentlemen, have a good Thanksgiving with your family.
Thanks a lot. You too.
Thanks, Mary.
All right, thank you.
You do the same. And, yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah, there's places all over the internet that tell you that the yuan is now backed by gold. It's just not true. I don't know if they come up with this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. But it must be true, Patrick. It was on the internet.
It was on the internet that Al Gore invented a week before he invented global warming, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Here is Rachel. She says, I'd like to get your opinion regarding purchasing real estate, currently residential, with all the talk of pending recession again. I'm wondering if we'd be better off to wait until the spring to see what might happen and risk higher interest rates, but possibly have more inventory to choose from and the lower home prices, or if it's still a good idea, in your opinion, to purchase now before the end of the year to lock in the current low rates. I just wouldn't want to buy something and then have another 2008 happen. I already went through that once with a home purchase in the late 2006 and ended up losing a lot of money because of the drop in the home values after 2008. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, for your own home, you know, you find what you like and you buy it when you can buy it. That, to me, is more important, that you stop paying rent right away. And start getting the deduction that comes with owning a home. However, if I were an investor and thinking about investing in real estate, I would take a wait-and-see attitude and see at least what's going to happen with the tax code. If they're going to limit the deductibility of home interest or of local taxes, that could significantly affect the price and value of real estate. So So except for your own home, I would be very cautious as an investor here, and I would at least wait for a little bit of confirmation that the bottom from the 2008 crisis is behind us. That's, again, speaking as an investor. As a person who doesn't have a home and you are thinking of buying a home, yeah, I would do it now. I wouldn't wait because interest rates are the main cost determining factor for homes, your home, what you can afford to pay in terms of interest. And rates are low now as they've been in a long, long time. In fact, I think historic lows. Somebody was telling me they could get a 30-year mortgage yesterday, 3.75.
Really? So, but Andrew, what I've seen on, if a tax deal gets done and they do mess with the mortgage, isn't that high number so high that most of us, it's way above our threshold anyway, isn't it, or not?
Well,
what
not,
have you seen?
Not an investor.
Oh, not an
not,
investor.
Not an,
yeah.
Not an investor.
But yeah. a regular home buyer is not going to mess with our interest rates much.
Probably not, right. But that's why I separated the two.
Okay.
You know, if you're a person who's already taking, let's say, the max deduction in local property taxes and interest, and they limit the amount that you can take, and now you add another investment property that you can't deduct the local property taxes on, or you can't deduct the interest on, that might change the entire equation for you. So I would, as an investor, I would wait out the tax change, 2018, and as an individual homeowner or new home buyer, I wouldn't wait another minute to buy that home.
So for your own home, if you like something, you can afford it, and the interest rate is low, just go for it. Because it's not, the interests aren't going to get any lower, right?
No.
No way.
I doubt you'll see it cheaper.
3.7.
And, you know, having Uncle Sam as your partner, it would just be perfect.
Just be perfect, yeah.
Your payments are going to be lower than you've ever seen them. So, yes, for an individual thinking of buying a home, this is a good time to act. For the investor thinking of how to deploy excess capital, I would really think twice about adding investment property at this point in the cycle.
Glenn writes in, I know that Andrew Goss is has an interesting philosophical base on things in the government. I'm wondering, I read an article that 49% of people in this country favor mandatory military service, and I wonder what Andrew's thoughts is on that. I didn't see that.
Oh, I'm all about that, man.
Really? Really?
Oh, yeah. Well,
you both
my
that,
father
huh?
was... Oh, yes. My father was military, so, you know, I had the military upbringing at home. Most kids don't get the benefit of that. You know, you don't get the... Of course, I hated it at the time, but, you know, now as a grown man, I realize that a lot of the things that are taught in the military and taught to me by my father and to a recruit by a drill sergeant... you know, things like honor and integrity
and so forth. Right.
You know, all of that these are valuable lessons that some sort of mandatory public service would be in order, whether it was military or not, I suppose could be up for debate. But for an entitled generation, I believe that just might be the cure. You know, go out there and do something for somebody else, even if it's Peace Corps related, not military related, the way John Kennedy wanted to do. So, yes, some sort of national public service is not a bad idea if it's a disciplined type of a service, the way the military is. So,
well, yeah.
Yes, I would be in favor of mandatory 2 years in the military. Send them on.
Yeah, I went at 19. I went in for 4 years. And I tell you what, you come out a lot more grown up than you went in. I mean, you...
Yeah, with confidence.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And boy, yeah. You go through the discipline and... Just to keep wash your own clothes and
yes.
get up at
make
4
your own bed.
And get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and march to breakfast and wait there for an hour before you eat breakfast. I mean, we did all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, it's true.
That's right. You do your calisthenics. You get up. You're out of the rack early. You make your own bed. And,
yep. You grow up.
Yes,
you grow up real quick.
Yeah, you're responsible for every little piece of gear that the military issues to you.
Yeah.
And keep it in tip-top shape, and well, all the things that we take for granted as kids. You know, we drop our clothes, we leave our dirty dishes around. You just don't do
that. You don't do it, no. You don't do it.
You just don't. And, you know, my favorite one was, oh, yeah, you could put whatever you want on your plate. Anything, you can load that plate to the top. But what you put on that plate, you will eat.
You will eat. That's right.
You're not going to.
Yeah, boy, you could see the young kids today. They could use a couple years of that, couldn't they? God love them. They
yeah. Were,
yeah.
Not saying they're spoiled and soft.
No,
or anything,
no.
Spoiled and soft.
Yeah, I don't think they don't. I don't know how they would exist without their cell phones, Andrew, for 2 years. You know, I don't know if they could do it. No.
Yeah, it'd be a good experience.
Yeah. All right, so you knew this was coming. Amazon employees have been test driving Amazon Go. This is pretty cool. Store downtown Seattle. Consumers walk in, pick up an item, pay for them without ever standing in a line of cashier. It's like an app, and they just know what you buy. Oh, this is good. This is
yeah.
good. Whoa.
Yeah.
You'd predicted
yeah,
this long ago. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. You don't even stop at the cashier. You just pick it up, walk out with it, and you didn't steal it. It'll show up on your Amazon card.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So the mechanics of shopping, of consuming, have, like everything else, gotten much easier. And, you know, the old days of doing research, going to the library, checking out a book, and so forth, you think about how antiquated that seems to a computer person. That's the same way they're going to view shopping in another couple of years. And I would suggest this will be the biggest holiday season online that anyone has ever rank and file folks that I talk to tell me, oh, I'm not fighting the malls this year. I found this new online thing, whether it's Walmart.com, Amazon.com, Target. I mean, every retailer is setting up this virtual store, and in the case of Amazon, an actual store where they just made the shopping experience so much easier based on technology. The same thing Elon Musk is doing with automobiles, and I don't know if you've seen his new electric semi, but this is quite the thing.
Yeah, so there will be, let's stick with Tesla for a minute because I have an article here. Did you read about this Fisker thing? You know about this? I know that you're kind of a battery geek.
Yeah, Fisker, early electric car.
Yeah, and they claim that they have, and they're going to, you know, it's a few years away, but have a density of 2.5 times when compared to the standard
battery.
EV batteries. Man, that would be a big breakthrough, wouldn't it, if they can do that?
Well, that's where it's coming from, right? An EV battery that gets a full recharge, I think, in 1 hour. And Heinrich Fischer, I mean, he's the guy behind it is what, I mean, he's, you know, years into the automobile thing, I think.
He's on it, right?
He used to work for Aston Martin, you know.
So that would lengthen the max distance and then also shorten the time you need to charge it. So could that croak a guy like Tesla if he doesn't have this battery?
Sure, it could.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Whoa,
you know, just because he was first to the market doesn't necessarily mean that he'll keep his market share, which is why he was so frantic about the battery plant.
The $5 billion deal or whatever it was?
Yeah, that's the whole key. The key to the whole deal.
His batteries. So,
and not just the electric car, but every other electric appliance you can think of will benefit from longer battery life and quicker charging. So
things
that couldn't be done with electric motors before, you'll suddenly find being done, much more efficient.
Don't you think that's just fascinating because you know about this stuff, Andrew, that after all these years, they're just now getting to the point where they're going to make these batteries bigger, better, stronger.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty curious, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when you think that the first car was electric, right?
Yeah,
car was the first car. It's ironic. But, yeah, the battery has been what's holding them back. And not just the cars.
Oh, it's for home and everything, right? Sure.
Your home, your electrical grid. You know, the conversion of DC to AC.
Right.
Polyphase.
Right.
You can't store AC polyphase, and you know the idea that you could store current in a battery was ignored once Nikola Tesla, ironically, introduced AC polyphase. So it was, hey, we can produce all the electricity we want, send it, you know, whatever distance we need to, and thoughts about batteries didn't exist anymore. Now it was all about generation and distribution. We've crisscrossed this country with wires. And now we're heading the other way, what people call off the grid. You know, the idea that your plant and systems of your home are completely self-contained and don't rely on any outside impetus to operate. You know, you're self-contained and self-sufficient.
Well, as you know, I was off the grid when we built this house in 97, and I think the system cost $25,000 back then. I mean, that was a lot of money, right?
Sure.
25 grand.
Yeah.
Now, we did get $10,000 from the state of Texas. Somebody figured out how to do that. I remember the builder did. I can get you $10,000 from Texas for doing that. Okay. And it worked great, Andrew, for about six, seven, 8 years, and then the batteries just...
The batteries.
They just crooked. And then you look at how much watts I was producing and what my bill was. It didn't even make sense, you know, to spend another $5,000-$6,000 for new batteries. You know, just...
And those are the sunken costs. You know, when people think about their photovoltaic systems, for example, so they, you know, they lay out $30,000, and then that's it. They're energy efficient. You know, they're off the grid.
Right.
They're completely disconnected. But you ask yourself, well, if my electric bill is $300 a month, how long will it take me to regain my $30,000? It's a long time, folks. It really is.
Yeah, and my bill's only $100 a month. Yeah, only $100 a month. It's like crazy.
By the time you recoup it, your batteries are kaput. And you need to start again.
Yeah.
So it is.
Of course, I could do it like a Sunny Boy system and just now, if you got the right kind of
feedback to the grid,
you know, and do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just use it during the
day.
Yeah,
and that's solved the battery problem in the short term. So instead of trying to store the electricity on your property, you feed it back into the grid, they distribute it for you to the people that need it at that moment, and perhaps they store it. But this is the real issue in transmission and distribution, is the storage of electricity.
Storage.
People don't think of it in those terms, but when the battery technology improves, and again, Fisker's patent suggests that it's going to improve pretty quick, then you'll see electrics just overtake the internal combustion engine, and the idea of gasoline as fuel will probably be a distant memory.
So if you were going to do some kind of a backup system with a generator and you wanted to make sure you were covered, would you just put bury a tank in your yard and use propane to power that generator and keep that baby full? Was that the best?
Well, that's the point.
Is that the best way to do it?
No, it's not.
No? Well, what's the best way to do it?
And the best way is with batteries, grid-attached batteries.
Right, but no, I mean as a backup, if you need it to have...
Well, that is your backup, because if your grid loses power, then now the batteries can run the operation until the grid restores itself. If you're looking for a backup to that, then the propane dual-fuel generator would be the way to go. Run on either, you know... diesel or
propane,
natural gas.
Yeah, because I think the only problem there is if you don't have sun for a week or depending on how many panels you got, but that doesn't generally happen, you know. Right?
No, that's right. If it's photovoltaic, if you're capturing from the sun, and which is the other thing that's going to be big in the coming years, is the building integrated PV photovoltaic
right on the roof,
integrated into the building.
Yeah.
Well, the windows themselves, or the roof shingles themselves, or the siding, would all have the photovoltaics integrated into that component.
That's kind of cool.
So you didn't have this, you know, separate system that's installed on top of your house. These elements would actually be part of your house.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're replacing your window, wouldn't it be great to have a window that generates electricity?
Yeah.
And the new thin film solar and things such as that. Full spectrum solar panels and so forth. The technology is just advancing at a breakneck pace, and the more we use it, the more we learn about it. Same thing with batteries, and I think they're really going to revolutionize the future.
Isn't Elon?
But
isn't,
you know, which? It, I'm sorry. From an investment point of view, that's you don't know which one is going to win the day. Imagine everyone who invested in Thomas Edison's General Electric when it first started, and then found Westinghouse and Nikola Tesla eating their lunch. So you don't know. When it comes to investing in those types of things, I only take about 15% of my money and devote it to that, and then I know that it's a crapshoot. I might have the best handle on technology in the world, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to make money by buying that stock. So I still follow that same method. 85% of my wealth is in gold and silver coins in a stack, and very little. There's not much chance that I would ever liquidate that stack and start buying some company that's going to make a better battery. It's just not for me.
Unless you would like sell your gold and then buy Bitcoin, which is probably a good chance.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
I'm just being silly. Yeah, okay.
I know, and that's pretty damn silly if you must.
Well, I tell you what.
But, you know, listen, if you want to put your faith in that sort of an investment, then go ahead. If you're looking for something where risk is not a factor, then physical possession, gold and silver coins might make sense for you.
Did you see that off? Now, this is crazy. This offline wallet called Tether, something like that. Yeah, some dudes come in there and they're in their basement, you know, in their jammies, and you know, and hacked it for $30 million little dollars worth of bitcoins, and they can't find them.
Yeah.
I thought those offline things were safe. How is that even possible? I don't know.
Well, none of it's safe. That's the problem. And until the technology matures sufficiently that you can do something like that with confidence, I can't in good conscience tell anyone, hey, you know, put your money in this unit and know that you've eliminated your downside risk. At least with coins, I can show you all your risks, what they might be, and how to mitigate them. With electronic currencies like this, cryptos, you don't even know the market risk. You can't even put your finger on it. And when you think you've solved it, in the case of these offline wallets, suddenly you realize you didn't solve anything. It's still as much a risk as it was when you were keeping your bitcoins online or in cyberspace.
How about this for an investment?
Not for me.
Yeah. How about this for an investment? Volgograd Space Medical University in Russia say they have a pain-killing drug which outperforms morphine and does not cause addiction. Whoa. Man, I'd like to invest in that. That would be good if that's true. Can you invest in a Russian company like that?
Yeah, but see, you know, the thing with those opioid companies and the enormous profits that they were making, if their product wasn't so addictive, they wouldn't be making this much money. If it was just a painkiller that killed pain and that's all that was used for, there would be no profit to make. It would be very little. It's only that you have so many addicted masses that they make so much profit from those illegal drugs.
It's called RU-1205 right now. Outperforms painkillers like morphine and all these opioids, and but no addictive side effects. How is that possible? Well, I guess it's possible to get rid of the pain and not get you stoned, I guess. I don't know.
Well, then it will have no value. It will not meet with the widespread acceptance that the opioids have.
Because, I mean, what fun is that if you're not going to get whacked, right? I mean, who wants to take drugs?
Yeah, if you're not getting whacked, then you're certainly not going to be paying $30 a pill on the black market for something.
Here's an email for you.
That's the unfortunate fact.
What does Andrew think about the people working unpaid for a year, or often called internships, student teaching? It adds more to their student loans, and some of them actually have to pay tuition for the opportunity to work for free.
Yeah, just another scam. I mean, I hate to say it. In the film festival, we employ film students as part of their curriculum. And so it's effectively subsidizing what is a for-profit industry. I don't approve of it. I view it as indentured servitude. And I think even the most primitive intern should be paid at least a minimum wage.
Here's an email from a lady in Europe. Whoa, happy birthday to Fred, Andrew's partner. Is it his birthday today?
That's right. It's Kennedy Day. Remember I said he shares a birthday with John Kennedy. So, excuse me, his birthday is John Kennedy's death day. Forgive me. So, yes, happy birthday, Fred. It is November 22nd, and I wish you many more.
Well, Fred, happy birthday. Well, you can't forget his birthday, can you? Man.
No, indeed not. And if you're a person who knows Fred, call him and tell him happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday,
I'm sure he might appreciate that today.
Please ask Andrew, when the money system here in the U.S. first became based on debt, and explain how that happened from Dennis. Okay.
Well, that happened with the Monetary Decontrol Act, really. It's Gresham's law. So with the closing of the gold window in 1971, which severed the official tie, that was the point at which you could no longer say, here's my 35 Federal Reserve notes, give me an ounce of gold. Mm-hmm. So the gold window was closed. It was no longer redeemable. And that's really the day that it converted from gold-backed money to debt-backed money. And then no shortage of debt after that. After the closing of the gold window in 71, the Federal Reserve was limited in what they could convert into money by the charter, which meant only Treasury debt.
Only Treasury.
Only the sovereign, only the government's debt could be monetized or turned into money.
Right.
And then the Monetary Decontrol Act of 1980 gave the Federal Reserve the authority to monetize any debt instrument, not just the sovereign debt of the United States. So then
that was
they had the
one,
authority
right?
to... Yeah. That's right, yeah. Because from that point you could securitize everything from mortgages to student loans to credit cards to auto loans and create these synthetic securities that were treated like money, as though they were money because they were bonds. So that's it's all happened in our lifetime if you were born after 1971.
So this is right when President Reagan inaugurated in 80. Who was the forces behind this Monetary Decontrol Act? Just the bankers de jure, the same people?
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The employers of George H.W. Bush.
Oh, well, Georgie was in there.
Yeah,
God love.
You know, the Office of Strategic Services, OSS, was originally the bankers' private eyes. You know, they were the ones that operated in foreign countries in the interest of the dollar for the banks. And their first headquarters was in New York. The OSS became the CIA, and they've been the ones that have done the bag work for the money
the
machine
work.
Ever since.
The bag work.
Yeah, the wet work, whatever you want to call it.
The heavy lifting.
The stuff they don't like to talk about.
Man, 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 man. So President Trump pardoned a turkey, Hillary Clinton. No, a turkey just...
No, I was going to take that joke.
So. I know, you were going to do that one, but I just took that one.
But she really didn't wipe the surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad cheap shot.
Yeah.
But the Rosatom thing is certainly...
The what?
Making the... Well, you remember...
I don't know Rosatom.
When President Trump was running
in
the general election, the revelations that we made on this air concerning the Russian uranium deal.
Oh, that one. Boy, did you see that they have a guy who's an FBI informant that it's going to spill the organic kidney beans, I think, this week? And he says that they got the Clintons and this whole thing, they got them buttoned up. I hope he's got some bodyguards, because he, you know.
Yeah, no. Whoa. Well, he's got Victoria Tosening, which she's a high-powered lawyer, used to work for my industry organization, ICTA, so she's very competent. And I think they've already secreted the documents outside
so
that if anything does happen to him, the documents will be revealed.
So do you think there's a chance that the Bill and Hillary will, have a problem over this?
No.
They got too much power, huh?
See, they were part of the dynasty, right? So the same people that defend and protect John McCain and George Bush and, Mitt Romney, the whole crowd there also loyal compadres of Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Hmm.
So you will not hear anything from that camp, from the establishment camp. What'd you call them? The deep state?
Deep state, yeah.
Republicans? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They will defend the former president and his former first lady. So everything that they did will be glossed over as it has been. That is one thing they revealed, that they receive special treatment. When it comes to things like investigating crimes, they can count on special treatment, whereas the current sitting president might not be able to count on that. They certainly can. So that it just shows you where the real power is, not in our elected leaders, but in the what the church committee called the shadow government, the ones that really are always there and make the decisions.
Or JFK called the secret societies.
Yeah, and this is a continuity, continuation.
Something like that.
It's a continuation of that line, you know, the Bush-Clinton dynasty, and people controlled to them.
Wow.
And imagine Joe Biden, the vice president, who wanted eagerly to be the president and had served President Obama, you know, as best he could.
Mm-hmm.
How did he feel when Hillary Clinton received the president's endorsement and not him? And that the whole primary was rigged so that he never had a chance. I'd love to hear from Joe Biden today. I wonder what he's got to say.
So you're saying that regardless of what kind of smoking gun this Uranium One deal and the Russians come with the Clinton Foundation and the money, that it'll be next lifetime before Hill and Billary make up for this stuff that they've done.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, they will not be held responsible.
No. Until next time around, and then, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Even then. We'll find out the truth about it after they're both gone, but their dynasty will continue.
Oh, you mean so this information is going to be will be kept under wraps, you think? But, I mean, aren't these people all over Breitbart and Hannity talking about this?
Oh, indeed, yeah. And they're set to testify before in closed-door hearings.
Wow.
See, this is the same thing that happened to Richard Helms, director of the CIA in 1975, when he was called to testify before the House Assassination Committee about the Kennedy assassination and other assassinations.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave closed-door testimony. And what is it now, 2017? I'm still waiting for the transcript.
Really? Yeah.
Still waiting.
Wow.
And they weren't released in the last round. They won't be released in the next round. Who knows how long it'll be, if ever, that I'll get to finally read Richard Helms' testimony before elected officials. This isn't... That's not what we contemplate when we think about free and transparent and open government.
So these dynasties... They are so intertwined like a giant squid, as the Rolling Stone guy said, that you just couldn't break them apart.
No, and their loyalty is unquestioned because it supersedes nation.
Oh, wow.
It's not about nation. It's not about party. It's not about family. And it supersedes all of that, and the power is immense. So I don't doubt that even if they have the dirt, to the core,
nothing.
It just won't be revealed in the interest of national security like all the other things that are being kept from the American people.
Wow, man. No wonder they keep doing dumb stuff, right? They know they know.
Get away with it.
It's kind of like the banks, same thing, right? They just do fines.
Sure.
Yeah.
They just do fines. Yep.
How about, finally, what do you think about this? This is kind of interesting. There's a big bank in Michigan that says, you know what? If you don't have the down payment, we're going to give it to you. And if you don't have the closing costs, we're going to give that to you, too. Yeah, these are gifts.
Right.
Borrowers would not have to repay the down payment or the closing costs, but a 1099 form to report the income would be issued to the Internal Revenue Service by the bank so the gifts could be taxable depending on the borrower's financial picture. It's kind of clever.
That's a
way to sell some homes, man.
That's right. Zero down.
Zero down,
and
dude.
Maybe we can loan you a little more to cover the mortgage or cover the furniture that you need to fill up this new house with.
Wow. But I guess in Michigan, there's probably some spots down there that they just need to move, you know, sell some homes, right? Something.
Yeah. Well, you know, that 3% down payment thing, that's been pretty much the standard now. So why not a gift? If you can, you know, the 3% FHA mortgage now, the whole 3% can come to you in the form of a gift.
Uh-huh.
So if you're a kid and your parents give you the 3% for down payment, that's perfectly legal and perfectly legit. So now this savings and loan decides they're going to give you the down payment as a gift. Well, it qualifies as an FHA mortgage. Doesn't matter where the gift comes from. They contemplated that a family member might be giving that to you, but nobody said that the bank itself couldn't give you the 3% down payment.
That's amazing. And if you think that these folks are ever going to get off the cocaine. Here's Golden Mice Slacks, right? They say that if you like 2017 for growth, 2018 you're going to love, because the projected global economy is 4%. But here's what they say. Because to get this, we are going to be, the central bank is going to be more highly accommodative, and there's going to be more quantitative easing, and we're going to do whatever it takes. So they're telling you that they're going to print more money. These are the people that own the Fed, right?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, they're not being...
If you like 2017, you're going to love 2018.
Yeah. Well, Mr. G, go ahead.
If they're going to allow businesses to expense everything under the new tax plan, boy, you're really going to see a boom.
What do you mean expense more?
But you won't have to depreciate it over many years. You can expense it in the year that you buy it.
Oh, is that part of this new deal?
It looks like it's going to be. So that's the problem. We have no idea what it's going to end up to be. So we should just, especially from an investing point of view, if you're thinking real estate or companies or things like that, these things are very sensitive to the tax code. So I would sit on the sidelines just for a minute until I see what exactly they're going to do.
So do you think, timing notwithstanding, that they'll get something done, but who knows when?
Not this year. Not this year.
Mm-hmm.
Next year.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. So, and it couldn't be retroactive for 17?
No.
Probably not, huh? Well, I hope you restart the Zimbabwe stock market. Went down 35% today. Hello. Oh, my. Man, see, that would have been a play right there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Short.
Go short Z. Well, Mr. G, what's up with you for tomorrow? What are you going to do? Anything fun?
Well, I think I'm going to fix my studio.
Tomorrow's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. I'm teasing.
I know.
Of course, we're going to have the grandkids around. We're going to eat our turkey and be thankful for each other's presents. And looking forward to Christmas.
Yeah. You'll be back at work Friday, or you take that off too?
No, I'm definitely working Friday, yeah.
No rest for the weary.
This conversation, we're running out of time. We're running out of time.
Yeah, you are a gold monster. We love you.
Well, thanks. 1300,
thanks for everything, brother. And we love you, and thanks to Cindy and the family and everything. Are any of the kids from Austin coming up, or are they going to stay here?
Sure, they're here, of course.
Oh, yeah. They're there, man.
Kids, they're all here.
They're all there. Well,
gang's all here.
Send them our love, and you guys have fun, and we'll get together during the week or whenever you get ready to get this studio thing going. I guess you're going to have to pull in some heavy hitters, right?
Yes, I'm calling the engineers in.
That's right. All right, kiddo, thanks a lot. Tell folks your number. They can talk to you on Friday or today or Friday if they want.
Or if you want to call today, 800-468-2646. That's 800-468-2646.
Thanks a lot, brother. Thanks. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. I've known Andrew since the early 90s. And as you can tell, he's the bomb. He's the real deal. 800-468-2646. You want to explore the world of numismatic coins. So we're going to have fun. I'm going to go to some friend's house tomorrow and have some food, have some chow and hang out. And so we'll see you Friday morning with Open Phone Friday. Be aware that Living Libations has a nice sale going on. If you want to buy some Christmas gifts, and also be on the lookout for a big sale, 20% off. We're going to give you the promo code on the website. Sharon's working on that little ad, and that's going to be starting in a day or so. So if you want to buy some whey and load up and do that. And I'm here for you. If you need something, you want to go get a sauna on sale, just email me and we can do it anytime you want. And I love you all very much. Thanks for everything. We'll see you Friday morning at 9 o'clock, Open Phones.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.